The whole purpose of this podcast is to talk with people in CHH about things that aren't necessarily CHH, because there are so many things outside of the music that are cool or happening, or that people have this amazing story. So obviously your amazing story is you are a professional wrestler and you were in the WWE, you wrestled in Japan, you've wrestled in Florida, you've done all the indie circuits, and now somehow you went from the ring to a different type of arena, the God Over Money arena, which are you know, lyrical fighters anyway, with the pen.
Yeah. So
I want to talk about that journey of how you went from there to where you're at now. Obviously that you have two completely different audiences that follow you, I'm sure. You have the people who are there for the hip hop, who don't know about the wrestling background really. Right. And then you got the wrestling people who are like, we just want to follow you because you're a wrestler and we don't care about rap. So I want to join those two worlds together. I guess first and foremost, like, how did you get into wrestling? Doing my research, I see that you have matches as early as 2005. So like, what was you, maybe even before that? So kind of what was the start for all of that that got you into wrestling?
So I had my debut was in 2004 when I broke into the biz. Now I've seen the written up on me. It says 2005. It also says that I'm it says it has some other information that's not accurate. But my debut was 2004 in Akron, Ohio. And I just grew up watching wrestling my whole life. And we were all fans of it. I watched NWA, you know, my whole life. And then I had a first divorce 2004 and decided to take up a new hobby. Something, you know, to help me get through it. And I just got into pro wrestling. I figured I'll just actually try instead of just being a fan of it. And I fell in love with it. I mean, later on, I fell out of love with it, but I fell in love with it. And I wrestled for 4 years independently from 2004 until 2008. Got a contract with WWE, and the rest is history.
Yeah. So how does one just say, you know what, I don't want to be a fan, I want to be a wrestler? Obviously, I'm sure you were in great shape already. But like, where do you go and just say, hey guys, what's up? I want to be a wrestler. Take me.
So there's wrestling schools everywhere. There's way more than there ever has been now. Like, anybody can be a wrestler. Like, if you look on television, just look at WWE or even AEW, anyone can be a wrestler. It doesn't matter. Before, you had to have star power, you had to have the it factor and a star value, and you had to look like something. Now anybody can be a wrestler, and which is, you know, cool, but it is what it is. I'm not a part of the business anymore. I don't care. But so I went to a school in Akron. I saw they had local access television, and they would air their weekly show. They would have a show every week, kind of like the indie, their local version of Monday Night Raw, so to speak. And I would see it, and I saw it one time, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to actually try this. And then I went down, I called the number, told them who I was, left a message, and went to the show, saw when they aired, what time, day and time and location, and then walked in and met the owner, and he put me in a ring and had my first match, my first day in the business, which is an absolute no-no. But I had my first match, my first day in the business.
And how did it go?
Oh, it went really well. I didn't know what I was doing, but I had, he had me before the match. You know, I did a couple of things, really basic things, to show him my athleticism, and he just seemed impressed enough to put me in the ring in the match. And I got squashed, as they call it, in like 3 minutes by a guy half my size, who ended up becoming winners. And he trained me well. He taught me a lot. Him and my other two brothers, they trained me very well. Took me under their wing. But yeah, I just basically got beat up for 3 minutes, and that was that. But that was my first ever match.
And what were you doing before? Like, what were you doing? Odd jobs? Did you have a career? Like, what were you doing before?
Certainly didn't have a career. Yeah, I was working. I have worked in behavioral health and mental health for like 25-ish years.
Okay.
And that was what I was doing at the time. And I was also still playing football. It was at the end of my semi-pro football career, quote unquote. And I was still trying to play pro football. Like I went to a bunch of arena football camps. I went to an AFL camp. And I don't know if people here are old enough to remember the AFL, but that was the kind of the NFL of indoor football, so to speak. And then there was a few other smaller leagues, but I went to an AFL camp, and I actually forgot about that. But anyway, for the Columbus Destroyers, we're in Columbus, Ohio, and yeah, that was as far as I made it as far as pro football. I went to camp, and then I just continued playing football and got into wrestling, and then I was working, and I was recording at the time too, like still making music, like trying to make music, and just trying to do everything I could, struggling, trying to get through life.
So you've been taking bumps a long time and
Whole long time, yeah.
in various sports. And so you were
Yeah.
also rapping back then also, or were you doing other
Oh yeah,
things
I've
too?
been, yeah, well, no, mainly just hip hop. Like it was secular hip hop, but I dabbled in a little bit of rock music, but like I've been recording since like 97 for a very,
Wow.
very, very long time. I've been recording and producing for a very long time.
And have you always had the same style, or have you kind of finally found the pocket that you're in now?
Yeah, a little bit of both because I've always kind of been a chopper. Like I've always been in love with the double time flow, the triplet flow, different patterns. But it took me until now to really master multiple different styles of patterns and be able to hear a beat and find different pockets that the average person wouldn't be able to find. And someone like a Tech N9ne who was a heavy inspiration, Bone Thugs, Twista, Busta Rhymes, people like that, or even Big Pun, who are an Eminem for that matter, very big inspirations on how to find different of the beat, something that's and shock the listener. And then, rap patterns as well. I've always been, very aggressive, very, very, very aggressive, with my delivery, my voice, my vocals. I was probably more punchline heavy early on, like a battle rapper, so to speak. And I tried to be a battle rapper. It didn't work out well for me because I didn't know what I was doing 20 years ago, but I tried. But yeah, now it's taken a long time for me to really hone my craft, so to speak. But it takes a while to do that. It takes a long time.
I got you. And going back to wrestling, did you see the Netflix show, The Wrestlers, about OVW?
No, I didn't. I didn't. But I've actually been to OVW. That's where I did my trial.
Okay. Yeah, so I watched that show. It focuses on OVW and Al Snow and what they're doing there. Really no joke. So how hard were those days, and what made you keep going? Because a lot of these people are in it, and it doesn't seem like they're going anywhere a lot of the time, and I know it's not a lot of money, and it's tough. So what made you
It is
keep
very
going, and
tough.
how hard were those days?
Earlier on, before I got my contract, it was just something that I fell in love with doing. The high of being in the wrestling ring in front of people, being imitating the people I grew up watching, my heroes, doing their moves. I was just a wrestling fan in the ring, but then I ended up being pretty good at it early on, and I caught on to it pretty fast. And three good brothers of mine, they helped me and they trained me and taught me, and then I ended up picking up traction around the Ohio Valley area, and so just between Philly and like Wisconsin, I wrestled. They took me a lot of places, between Philly, Detroit, Wisconsin, Chicago, all over Ohio, West Virginia, just all over Pennsylvania. Basically, we just wrestled all over those areas, and my brothers Josh and Lamont, man, they took me under their wing, and it was hard. I didn't get paid for a match for a year, my whole first year, and then I started to finally get paid $20 for a match, and that was a big deal. And from there, it was. Yeah, I remember driving 8 hours to Philly to wrestle for $75, but you know, I was a brand new, I was new in the business. I'd only been wrestling for about 4 years at the time. And I got to wrestle with the Sandman at the ECW arena. I got to, you know, wrestle with and meet a lot of the old ECW originals there. And that was part of where my breakout came, and which led to my contract opportunity.
So it was around that time that you thought, like, hey, you know, this is a possibility that I'm going to make it.
I started to want to make it. I didn't think it was a possibility, because back then signing with WWE was so far-fetched. Like, it was like the odds of signing in the NBA or going to the NBA, or the odds of being the next Drake. You know what I mean? Like, that's how far and few in between it was to actually make it to WWE. Now they sign everybody. Everyone goes to WWE now. Like, it's anyone could be a WWE wrestler. Then the atmosphere was in the business was different. Like, you just, it really had to be, it had to be something. Like, there had to be something special or something, some strike of lightning. Like, it just to get a WWE contract, and God saw fit to let me have one. So, yeah, I don't know how special I was, but God certainly saw fit to let me have one.
Oh man, that's amazing. So eventually you join WWE developmental, then you go to NXT, and then, you know, more time passes, and then you're part of the main roster with Nexus. So like, what were kind of the steps from developmental to NXT to Nexus?
Yeah, so I got signed. It's a crazy story how I got signed too, but I got signed. They sent me to OVW to do my tryout, and I did my 1 week audition. You know, audition there, and that was in January of 2008. And then they informed me February 2008 that they were going to sign me and move me to Tampa, Florida. I thought I was originally moving to Louisville, Kentucky, because that's where OVW is, and I was going to be able to, you know, drive home and go see my kids and things like that, and that was the plan. Of course, I didn't have a car at the time, but then they called me, informed me I'd be moving to Tampa, Florida, and I had never even been to Tampa, Florida. I saw somebody comment on PR. Yeah, I wrestled in Puerto Rico a few times. I wrestled Savio Vega last time I was there. I moved to Tampa, and it was a dream come true, because I always wanted to live in Florida, and 1 week later, I was in main event of WrestleMania 24, standing next to Floyd Mayweather. And then from there, it was a grind. It was tough. Had some great memories. And 2010, NXT was created. And then I debuted in the first season of the original NXT. And then that was February 2010, June of 2010, they created the Nexus. And then we debuted. And then the rest was really history.
Yeah. So how did you end up with the name Michael Tarver?
Oh, man, that's funny. So when I first got signed, we were using our real names. And then after about 3 months, they told us quickly we need to come up with a name that they can copyright. So my name went from my real name, to which is Tyrone Evans, to Tyrone Jones. I was wrestling as Tyrone Jones for a while. And then, which is funny. And then from there, we had to come up with different names. So I came up with the boxing character, and with the knockout punch, the 1.9 second knockout punch. And then next thing you know, the Big Show's knocking people out on SmackDown. So then I wasn't allowed to use my knockout punch anymore, even though it came from me. But anyway, that's how it happens. And so they gave me the name Tyson Tarver after two boxers, because the WWE creative is extremely creative. They, a boxer, boxing character named after two boxers is, you know, but anyway. So then Tyson Kidd debuted with the Hart Dynasty, who's a good friend of mine, TJ Wilson. And he debuted, so then I lost the name Tyson. So I was just using Mr. Tarver for a while. And Mr. Kennedy was still at WWE. So I'm in developmental, like, I gotta find a name. Yeah, I was like, I gotta come up with a name. So here's a crazy story. So in 2009, at the end of 2009, I had, what an experience it was. So Halloween 2009, my ex-wife and I went to this, haunted house. And then I went and saw the movie Paranormal Activity. I've never been to a haunted house. And Paranormal Activity was the very last horror movie that I will ever watch again. And that caused me to have some very violent, intense PTSD and intense spiritual attacks. Like, it was kind of crazy. The entire month of November, it was crazy. Like, I was like hearing voices, seeing things. I couldn't sleep. Like, I was going crazy. And you know, I learned a lot about that experience. But during that month, I remember having a conversation with a young guy who was there at NXT, and we were talking about the movie The Crossroads. He was 19 years old. I don't know how he knew about the movie The Crossroads. And so we were talking about the movie The Crossroads with Ralph Macchio, and where he played the guitarist, and Bobby Johnson, I think his name was, the old blues guitarist who supposedly sold his soul to the devil to be a guitarist or whatever. Yeah. And so we were talking about that, and for some reason that gave me an idea for a character. So the character that I came up with that WWE loved but wouldn't let me do it on TV, which I heard somebody copy, but where I would do a split personality, like I would juxtapose two different personalities. And the gimmick of it was that it was the angel on one shoulder, devil on the other. And, right. So I would walk up to the person and on one shoulder, and I would talk to him, like, you know, very gently, you know, whatever. And then ask him, you know, let me ask you a question. You ever feel like you had an angel on one shoulder, then walk to the other shoulder, and then and a devil on the other, and then completely like be super aggressive and all of that. And I got standing ovations, and they went crazy. Dusty Rhodes went crazy. They loved it. And I had to come up with a name, so I came up with the name Michael Tarver. Michael, as far as the Archangel Michael.
Yeah.
And because I wanted the character to be a biblical character. Like, and I was pitching, like, that I, you know, feud with Undertaker because of his character, the nature of his character. And, like, I was like, they would tell us, like, hey, submit stuff to the creative team. So I'm, like, writing all kinds of storylines, and I'm like, yo, I can feud with this person and that person. I can, you know, and I was very highly regarded on the microphone at WWE. That, you know, they'll never say it, you know, only people that were there know, you know, they'll say it, but like I was very highly regarded with promos, like to the likes of like the greats. And this is coming from Dusty Rhodes, who, God rest his soul, is no longer with us, but, you know, Dusty Rhodes and Vince McMahon themselves, like, these are their words. And, but, you know, the world will never know that I could really, had a really good promo, and it was an understatement, but I tried to like create that character, and I named it Michael Tarver, you know, because I still had the boxing element, but the Michael was the, you know, angel on one shoulder, devil on the other, like the that kind of biblical, spiritual element.
Man.
But yeah, that's how I came up with the name.
Man, I was going to say, like, we really never got to see you speak too much on TV. And you had your mouth covered half the time. You had the mask on before. Wearing the mask was cool in 2020. So
Right. That was figurative too. I came up with the mask character to be a I'm so dramatic. The mask was a muzzle. That was the message. That was figuratively that it was a muzzle because they wouldn't let me talk on TV because they knew that you know they knew what I could do, so they wouldn't let me talk. So I put on the mask originally and to be a muzzle. And that was when we were in NXT in England, and we had to do a promo challenge. And everyone was thinking, oh, this is my bread and butter. This is where I was going to kill it. But instead, I decided to walk up, and it was the first time I ever done it. I cut the sleeve off my T-shirt, and it had a T on it. And I covered up my face, and then I walked up to the podium and then just stood there and then let the, like, 20,000 people in the O2 Arena just yelling crazy stuff at me, just, you know, whatever. And then I just walked back to my spot, and everybody was just completely surprised that I didn't say a word. And the only person that got it was Vince McMahon. He got it. He was like, see what you did there. But, you know, I put the cover on my face, you know, to show, like, now when I'm allowed to talk, you don't want me to, you know. It was just, I was just trying to stand out, being dramatic, you know, whatever. But that was the point of the mask.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
By the way, can you still not see me?
I can't see you, no. Okay. I can hear you, though.
Okay, well, yeah, that's good. Everyone can see both of us, but all right, so you're talking to yourself right now, so you're doing the best promo that you can.
I'm doing the best promo I can.
Okay, so what do you remember most about that Nexus debut? I mean, for me, wow. I didn't grow up watching wrestling in the 90s. I actually started watching in the mid-2000s with my friend. So up until that
Yeah.
point, that was like the wildest thing I had ever seen in that
Wow.
debut.
Yeah. Man. So it was a crazy weekend. We were in South Beach, and the day before that was my oldest daughter's birthday, and I had proposed to my ex-wife. And I had no idea what was going to happen the next day. And we went into the arena, and they told us, they brought us into a room, and they told us it was all of the agents and producers, and this man himself, and then they told us, they handed us armbands, and they said, "Here's the plan. This is what you have to do. Do not tell anyone. Destroy everything. Break everything. If it looks fake, you're fired." We were like, "Oh." So we were okay, like destroy everything, like so people, and it was to the point where like security was trying to like jump over the guardrails, trying because they thought, you know, we were really, 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 you know, beating up John Cena. We just violently just destroyed everything, and I don't know if that had never been done before as far as the ring being torn up, but if it hadn't, it hadn't been done in a while, and it made a lot of like mainstream media news outlets and which was really cool, you know. And I just remember, I met Rampage Jackson. That was really cool. Special guest because he was, they were promoting the movie, The A-Team. They were doing an A-Team remake in 2010.
Yep.
And the 70s, I think it was, 70s. And,
Yeah.
so yeah, so they were remaking the A-Team, and Rampage Jackson was playing Mr. T's character. So we were all warming up, and he walks up to me. He walks up to all of us, but he walks up to me. And I'm like, "This is freaking Rampage Jackson!" Like I love Rampage. Like I'm a huge fan of Rampage Jackson, and I was so surprised at how small he was. I was like, "Yo, what?" Like I expected him to be huge. He's not a little guy, but like I just didn't expect him to be so much smaller than us, you know? And I'm like, "Oh my God, what the?" He was so cool, man. It was just cool meeting him. Like I was just so hyped. And then I remember walking out, I put the mask on my face, and I stood there, went to our spots, and I stood in the crowd next to the guardrail, and people didn't realize I was there until this lady turned to my right, and she looked up at me and she screamed because I scared her. And I just kind of was laughing. I looked at her and I was laughing. And then I jumped the guardrail, and the camera panned around to me standing there.
Man, I'll never forget that. And then even going back and watching like highlights or whatever, it still doesn't do it justice from watching it in that moment. So only imagining
Yeah.
what you guys were all going through. Of course, Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson choking out Justin Roberts, and he got fired.
Yeah.
And then that was so. Are you still friendly with a lot of those guys? What sort of relationships did you form with talent? Are you still close to anyone there?
So I actually was just in Vegas with Justin Gabriel a couple weeks ago. So funny.
Awesome.
Yeah, I was just out there with him a couple weeks ago. He has a new company called Arcade Mania, and he's mixing pro wrestling with his love of arcade video games. And it's in Vegas, and what they do is they have a couple of matches, and they'll have some live music, and then people will play like an arcade tournament, like Mortal Kombat and things like that. And so I went out, and I brought him out to the ring, and I performed his entrance music. I did his entrance music a couple years ago, which he uses now still to this day. But yeah, I still, you know, Darren Young, we still talk on Instagram a lot. David Otunga, we still talk, you know, a lot. Ryback. I mean, that's pretty much it. I'm still friends with everyone, but like those are the few that are that I think I've been in contact with the most.
Okay.
But I've also kind of went like underground. Like I also kind of like disappeared, you know, because I went through a lot.
Yeah, and I know there's a gap and there's a whole story with the chair shot and Nexus fall apart, but everyone watching, you could find that on other YouTube interviews. We don't have to get into that because I know you've spoken about that like, you know, a couple times.
Yeah, it's all good.
So, you know, what's something in the WWE that happens there that you can talk about that would catch the wrestling fan off guard? Like they'd never imagine this was a thing.
Oh wow, that's a good question. So, I mean, there's a lot of very negative things, a lot, at least when I was there. Trying to find some fun things. So like the ribs, so the wrestlers back in the day, I don't know how they are now because everyone's so much younger, but like back in the day, the legendary wrestlers that were there before that I walked into, you know, the locker room that were there, they would rib each other. So they had, they all had like, you know, senses of humor, big sense of humor. You had to have a sense of humor to be in that locker room. So they would, you know, do a lot of practical jokes on each other. And I've heard like some horrifying stories of some horrible practical jokes. But, you know, I've heard of, you know, some of the guys like cutting one pant leg off of people's pants. And, you know, they happen to go to the airport and with one pant leg. Or I've heard of people shaving off eyebrows. Like somebody will fall asleep on a plane and get one eyebrow shaved off. I mean, or like having like suitcases or you know, gear bags Ziploc shut, or when they'll have like padlocks and they'll padlock somebody's gear bag. Like, I mean, those are pretty crazy things.
Any good pranks on you, or had, or did you perform any good pranks?
I don't. Nah, I never really did pranks. I never did them. I don't. I mean, there was a couple of times where, like, a friend of mine, his name was Alex Riley. He actually had Mr. Money in the Bank. Oh, wow. Look who just joined. Mr. Money in the Bank. I could have sworn I just saw Rodney Jerkins just join.
Yeah, he's there.
That's crazy. That is crazy. Rodney Jerkins, if you can hear me, thank you for Full Moon. That is one of my favorite albums of all time. Anyway, let me get my fanboy out. Yeah, so... so yeah, we would hide those money in the bank. We would hide their briefcase, you know, or whatever, and just tease them a little bit. But yeah, that was basically it.
Okay.
Wow. He said, "Thank you, my brother. You are welcome." That's crazy. That's crazy. I'm kind of, as we say in the business, I'm marking out right now. It's freaking Rodney Jerkins, Dark Child. That's crazy. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about too. Yo, Rodney freaking Jerkins.
You're not supposed to mark out. You're the wrestler.
Yeah, no, that's my child, man. You got, I got a fanboy. That's Dark Child. That's so cool, man. That's so cool.
All right. So after you were gone from the WWE, you traveled to a few different organizations, the Indies to Japan, and I'm not saying this as a knock, but like, what's it like to go from the major leagues and then kind of go back down to the minor leagues? Like, what does that do to you, I guess, mentally, physically, emotionally?
It's tough. It is tough. It's tough. You know, I remember when I first got released, I wasn't sure if I wanted to go back to doing independent wrestling. And then I did. And it was cool. Like, I started wrestling in Tampa, in Florida, and it, you know, it was cool. And it was a good group of people, and they took care of me. And after a while, you know, I started making connections. And then from there, I was able to travel. Emotionally, it was tough because I was going through a divorce at the time, and I lost everything. It was just a crazy time. And just, you know, trying to fight. I was obsessed with getting my career back. I was just doing everything I could, you know. But I stuck with it as long as I could. But from the time I got released, I was able to do some international work. I did 6 tours in India with the Great Khali, his company. Went to Puerto Rico, I think 3 or 4 times. Went to Japan, which was a highlight. It was a dream come true. Went to Africa. That was really cool. Went to Canada, England. You know, so these are things that, you know, I enjoyed. You know, I was very proud of that. I worked very hard to make happen.
Yeah. And now was music a part of that journey during all of this, or was it kind of on the back burner?
It was on the back burner. I was kind of, so I walked away from it for a little bit and was really focused and obsessed on getting my career back in wrestling. And Then in 2015, I got connected. Well, 2009, I connected with Pastor Tommy Kalan in Urban D at Crossover Church. And he really, really gave me the game on how to be independent, you know, with independent, how to copyright, how to, you know, get everything done with publishing, how to release everything independently through distribution, CD Baby, TuneCore, things like that. And I took his advice. And then in 2015, I just started going back, going crazy, you know, back into making, producing and recording, you know, Christian hip hop. And just, that was a journey in itself, alongside trying to continue my wrestling career, you know.
You have been dropping songs, and I was like, oh, Michael Tarver's doing music. But I remember specifically, like, that first big nod was where you called out God over money. So was that planned with them, or did that actually happen before anything was set in motion?
So, oh, okay, are you talking about in what how long ago? You talking about 2020?
I think this was 2020.
Oh, the freestyle, the control verse.
The control verse, right?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So, all right, so
that's kind of when I feel like you really got put on the radar, like, yeah, like that it was something, yeah, serious, because I think a lot of people were like, okay, this wrestler guy, he's doing Christian hip hop, that's interesting. But then all of a sudden you drop that control verse and you start calling out Bizzle and Dayton, and they're like, oh, okay, what's this happening now?
Yeah, that was my son actually came up with that idea. It's funny. So Dayton and I connected in 2017, and we connected and we started kind of working together. Well, no, we didn't start working together. He started giving me advice, and he started helping me, just give me advice. And then I took his advice. And then in 2019, he approached me to work together. He said, hey, you know, let me executive produce, you know, your next project. I was under a different name. And, so I said, okay, you know, no problem. And then I started in, you know, 2020, the lockdown happened, and then I was in a very tough situation. I was homeless, sleeping in a truck. Anyway, so I started hustling and started coming up with some different ideas. A good friend of mine named JC Perez was really helping me out with shooting videos. We were working together here in Tampa, Strong Life Raw, is his handle on Instagram. And we were like shooting videos together and just making content. And before really the short form content really started blowing up, and I started duetting people. So the first person I did a live duet was with Tech N9ne, and he didn't know who I was, but I just picked one of his songs and just did a duet and just posted it, and I tagged him, and then he responded. And I was like, whoa, oh, he's humble, man. He's a legend, but he's humble, you know, which was so surprising. And so then I kept doing it and kept doing it. And then I started just recording freestyles over popular songs. I'm like, you know what, I'm just gonna do freestyles. And I had a good friend of mine, you know, give me the idea. He said, you know, you should just do a mixtape. Just do a mixtape. And I never thought of that. So I started putting all of the songs together and started, you know, put them all together, and then found some free download, Noise Trade. And I put the first two on Noise Trade. And then after that, my son hit me up and he was like, yo, you should, my son Tev, the one who produced half my album. It was like, yo, he said, you should do a control verse. I'm like, I have a Kendrick control verse. And I realized I never actually heard the whole song. I had only heard his verse. So I went and downloaded it, listened to it. I was like, oh, okay. All right. Everybody killed it. But I see why everybody calls it the Kendrick control verse.
Right.
So I thought about it and thought about it. And I recorded it and I sent it to Dayton. And I said, hey, you think anybody will have a problem with me mentioning names? I was very careful about it. And he was like, nah. I said, now maybe one or two people, but he said, nah, I see what you did. You were very careful. You didn't diss anybody. Like, you weren't disrespectful, you know, but I see what you were doing. And I said, okay, cool. So, you know, he co-signed. He was like, all right, this is, you know, because if it wasn't, he wouldn't have co-signed. He'd been like, nah, you gotta change this. And, you know, he was like, yo, add another verse. So I added one more verse. And then Strong Life, JC and I, JC Perez, we shot a little video for it. And then, I kind of waited for Dayton to let me know when to post it. He's like, all right, I'm going to give you the, you know, I'll time it up when to post it. So I jumped on Back in the Ring for CJ Chang Dev Volume 1. And then when that came out, then we posted, then I posted the control verse. And then after that, it was crazy. It was crazy after that.
Yeah. And then now we're here. So
Yeah.
I specifically remember that. And I'm like I said, I was like, oh, this guy is serious. He's not just dabbling. Like he's going for it, and he got it. That's dope, man. That's so cool. So then you get the God Over Money slash Menace movement signing, which is incredible. So
Oh yeah.
that takes us to now. Tell us about your latest project, The War of Art.
Yeah. So the war of art, man, the war of art, the war of art. We 3 years, I mean really 20 something years, but I must have recorded since 2019 well over 100 songs. I always just say 100 songs, but probably closer to 200 songs.
Wow.
And I'm really not exaggerating at all. I was literally Dayton. I don't know how many gigs of memory Dayton has in his phone of just my songs. And I would just record it. I have a studio in my apartment, and and I'll show you. There it is, right there. That's where the magic happens, right there.
Nice. That's where the
And
war. That's where the war happens.
that's where the war happens. And in my my Menace flag right there. But my little apartment. That's where I go to work. So I just was sending music left and right, and we came. I came up with the concept of the War of Art, and I sent it to him, and he was like, "Yo, that is crazy! Where'd you come up with that?" So I explained to him, it was a nod to the Art of War, Bone Thugs and Harmony's album, The Art of War, and an inversion of the Art of War. Not necessarily, it has nothing to do with the book as far as like what the book talks about, The Art
Right,
of War,
right.
but just a flip of that to be thought-provoking and even polarizing. And the idea of it is the war of art being that I kind of fancy myself a warrior participating with the kingdom, for the kingdom, and in the war of this art, meaning my art, our art as Christian hip-hop artists, Christian artists competing against the world for the souls of the listener. And so I try to tie as much into the war of art as I possibly could, with the album cover, the cover art, making it kind of look like a Sistine Chapel kind of, painting kind of thing. And then even the sound of the album, very, and my sound is very heavy orchestral, kind of dramatic, even maybe a little gothic, like, choir, a lot of brass, things like that. So I'm from the school of when you look at the album cover and close your eyes and you listen to the album, it should, the sound of the album should match the cover art,
Yes.
and I mean that's that old school mentality, it should match the cover art. So like I every song that we picked, and song I wanted it to, if you hear the song, the cover art is what you should picture, so that's kind of what we went into. And then another cool thing about the album cover is people don't realize, if you look at the album cover very closely, it's like an AI generation. Mr. Cutright did the album cover, and he
Yep.
killed it. He absolutely killed
Right.
it.
Yep.
So, and shout out to him. So it's like an AI generation, as angels, on the ground, and angels flying over, and it's like a battle in the spirit world. And if you look very, very closely, you can see my face kind of super, kind of in the background. I'm peering or peeking into the spirit world, seeing the war of art taking place on my behalf as a child of God. And then I take my music, as the album is the soundtrack of that, so to speak. So next time you look at the album cover and look closer, you'll see my face if you haven't seen it
Yeah,
already.
because Cutright obviously works with us at Rapzilla. So I remember him
Yeah.
kind of showing me updates. He's like, yo, I'm doing the cover for Tarver. And he was like, kind of showing me, he's like, oh, they didn't like this one. So I tried again. And then, kind of
Yeah.
showing me the different steps of it. And then that final
Yeah.
product is the chef's kiss. Like, that's the one.
Man, oh man, I appreciate it, man. Yeah, I wanted, I wanted it to be different. I wanted it to be just big, like grand. Like I wanted people to look at it and just be like in awe of it. Like I was, picturing Kanye West Power video and the visuals, in the Kanye West Power video, not necessarily, well, not at all, what the visuals were, but the styling, the style of it, the very just the what I remember what they called it, like the motion stop motion, whatever it was called, but the way it looked, you know what I'm saying? Not those visuals, and definitely not those images, but just the way it looked. So I wanted to go with something that looked very similar to that. I'm going to my bathroom.
Okay.
But yeah, that was the idea that I want. It's something that just looked very just special, you know what I mean? Just different.
Okay, I got you. So
stop my ass. Majestic. I'll take that.
So to take it back a little bit from off the album, back to the wrestling world. Did you find like other Christians, or were there a lot of Christians within wrestling? Like, is there a place for them in there? I know I've spoken to Titus O'Neil before. I've spoken to AJ Styles, who's a huge CHH fan. So like, how was that dynamic?
I remember there was a time where there were a group of guys that would get together and we would have prayer. It's funny, people have asked me this, and I forgot all about this until now. I don't know why, but like there were a couple of guys. It was a very small group of guys. They would actually like kind of have a little prayer circle, but it didn't last very long. But yes, there were some believers there. You know, I was always told that Shawn Michaels was a believer. We all saw that Hulk Hogan just recently got baptized, and Undertaker professed his faith at his Hall of Fame ceremony. I remember Kofi was a believer. You know, I don't know where he stands now. I hope nothing's changed. A few other people, you know, and I know Titus definitely was. You know, Titus O'Neil, great guy. I've always heard that about AJ Styles. We've met on a few occasions, but we don't know each other. You know, we've never connected really on that level. But yeah, there were a few people, you know, and it wasn't like a big welcome mat for Christians there, but you know, we just showed up, went about our business, did our job, you know.
Yeah. And the crazy thing, AJ Styles, like I said, is a huge CHH fan. So I wonder if he's listened to your music. That'd be an interesting conversation if you run it.
I doubt it. But you know, if he has, then hey, you know.
All right, many wrestlers have rapped or tried to rap over the years. Take yourself out of the equation. Take yourself out. Who is the best rapping wrestler?
I would say R-Truth. Yeah, Ron the Truth Killings, man. R-Truth. He's still making music, man. He's still releasing fire music. Fire. He and I have talked a lot online, actually. Like one of these days we're gonna do a song together, man. I'm claiming it in Jesus' name. But one of these days, man, we've kind of talked about it a little bit. It's just, you know, whenever the time is right, you know, I'd love to be able to like, hey, can I get you on this track? Really dope to do a song with R-Truth. But I mean, there's been a few. MVP has made some music. Who else? Trinity, what is her name on television? She's one of the Usos' wife. She was
Trinity Fatu.
Yes, Trinity Fatu. Yeah, that's the last name now. Yeah, she did some music. There's been a few. There's been a few. I know.
Macho Man.
Oh yeah, Macho Man. Yeah. Oh yeah. There's a lot. A brother named Montezzi. He's an artist and producer. I think he works with AEW. Brother, very good brother. He makes fire. There's a few. Others, young brother, I can't think of his name, but I follow him on Instagram, but he does music with NXT, Light of Their Inches music. What's his name? Swerve Strickland. I think that is him. That's him. Yep. Swerve Strickland. I don't know him, but I know he does music as well. And who else? But yeah, a few other people. Few other people.
Man. All right. Yeah, that's dope though. So maybe you get to a wrestling mixtape one day. Just all the rapping wrestlers. All right. So are you done wrestling? Is wrestling
I am
out
done.
Of the picture for you?
Wrestling is out of the picture.
So
if
WWE, if Vince called you or Triple H called you and said they're doing a Nexus reunion and they wanted to bring you back for a storyline, are you saying no?
No, I do that. That I would do.
Well, yeah, because the check is going to be right for that too, for sure. I'm sure.
Who knows?
Maybe.
But you know, it would definitely. It would positively affect everything else that I'm doing now. So, you know, even if it wouldn't be what it should be, which, you know, there's checks that I'm missing from that company. You know, it would be a great opportunity that would help everything else that I'm doing. It would affect everything else I'm doing positively and get more eyes on the music. And that would be, you know, that would be exactly what I need.
Yeah,
but that would be about the only, yeah, that would be about the only circumstance I could see myself.
Yeah, and you might get to put like a good end cap on that too, because the way it next ended, the way your story ended, you know, there, you know, to kind of go back and be able to finish it off, that might be really cool. When was your last match? Not in
2 years ago, actually.
2 years ago. So it was,
2 years ago. 2 years ago was my last match.
And there's nothing you miss about wrestling at this point?
Yeah, there's a few things, I guess. I don't miss my body being beat up. I don't miss I don't miss all of the pain in my body being beat up from wrestling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The camaraderie, you know, is always good, and the brotherhood is good, you know, but just my body being beat up, I don't miss.
And I'm sure you still have some like repercussions from that, right?
You said concussions?
No, repercussions from like all the years of getting beat up. I'm sure you're still feeling it, right?
Oh yeah, concussions. the repercussions are the concussions.
Concussions are concussions. Oh man, how many of you have?
I probably had close to 20. Not gonna lie to you.
Wow.
But you know, smaller ones. But like, yeah, I've had probably close to 20.
I don't even know how you're able to rap and remember all those words. If you have that many concussions,
it's hard. It's really hard, actually. It's really, really hard. And I have to practice a lot.
Hey, you're still doing it, man. All right. So my final question to you is, you know, what else you want to talk about? Plug, add. What do people need to know about Monster Tarver? I guess we're entering 2024, so what can we expect?
Some good things. So I was actually blessed to be a part of a movie called Tunnel. I'm not quite sure exactly when it'll be released, but I was blessed to be a part of a movie called Tunnel with a great crew. I also have written a book. And
yes.
I wasn't going to start promoting it till the new year, but it'll be released on January 19th. The book is called Manic on Fire. And so this is how I'm starting 2024. And I'm already getting ready for the next up. I'm already working on it.
Awesome. Now, is the book about you, or is it a story? Like, what is it? Can you give us you already told us when it's dropping, so give us a little glimpse.
The book is a very tough book. It's a heavy book. So the book is about my fight against depression, lifelong fight against depression, health, to whether a lot of heavy life experiences all the way back to childhood and up till now, you know, and just, you know, getting through it and hopefully provide some encouragement. And just give some insight on who Monster Tarver is and what he's been through. And you know, it's a tough book. It was hard to write. It's something that I've wanted to do my whole life. But, you know, we were able to have a very good team. My brother, Eric Kleeman, Prolific Management, helped me get it done. And Check out Books for Athletes. You know, they're helping to publish it. And yeah, that's how we're starting the year, 2024.
That's a good start, man. That's amazing. I can't wait to check it out once it drops.
People, appreciate it.
Your testimony is fire. Yeah, I'm sure you're gonna find out more in that book. So I guess for everybody watching, you can where could everyone find you and your music and everything?
At Monster Tarver on all social media platforms, TikTok, Twitter. I don't do TikTok dances, but TikTok, Twitter, IG, YouTube. I just started a new Facebook page. I haven't been on Facebook for about 10 years. You can find it, Monster Tarver as well. And yeah, my mixtapes, the Monster Tapes 1, 2, and 3 are available on Bandcamp. If you look in my link, you can see the description there. Greatly appreciate it. Come through, show some love. The next 2 mixtapes are actually done, locked and loaded. It's just a matter of when they will be released. Monster Tapes 4 and 5 already done. And and I'm already working on the next album.
All right, man, that's dope. You're working, you're moving. So the next couple months are going to be big for you.
Hey, and look out for my son, Tev, one of the producers on my album. Look out for my son, Tev. He is about to be the next mover and shaker behind the boards in CHH. Yeah, he's about to kill it.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome doing this with your son too.
It's beautiful.
Well, all right, man. I would say, well, for me, it was nice to see you again. I know you didn't see me, but everyone else did. So you could watch me back. So you could actually see me talking to you. So this wasn't just, you know, make believe. But thank you so much, man. This was a super dope episode. CHH-ish podcast for everybody watching. Talks with CHH about things outside of it. So obviously Monster Tarver, he's a rapper, but he has an amazing story outside of that. And that story is still being written, even though he even wrote a book too. So there's going to be more story after his book. When will this come out? Person asking this, you mean this interview or the book? If it's the interview, I'm going to post it right after we get off of here. If it's the book, you said what, January 19th?
January 19th. It will be available on digital.
Just follow Carver and you got it. Oh, you got a copy?
I have a copy. This is the book. Actually, I have many copies.
Got the whole box. Right in front of them.
Yeah.
Props ready.
Many copies. Yeah. This is the book. I'll start promoting it on the first. But yeah, God is good, man. I'm hustling. Faith without works is dead.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you. And I hope to talk to you soon, man.
Sounds good. Thank you, my brother.
All right, bro. Peace. All right, everyone. That was Monster Tarver. Super dope interview. I hope you enjoyed it. If you came in the middle of it, I'm going to repost this so you can watch it. We're also going to cut this up. We'll make different content. He dropped some exclusives on us from the WWE side, from the book, from his album. Please give him a follow if you are interested in following me. Here is my @. If I could actually use the keys. I'm going to try to do this show every Wednesday. We talk to different people who have amazing stories outside of just the music. I'm not going to tell you who's next, but I do have a list of a bunch of people. And of course, we have Making the Cut every Monday, except for this Monday because it's the new year. And of course, we have Critique Fridays with Onbeat Music on Friday. But I hope everybody has a good rest of the week, that you had a great Christmas. I hope you have a happy, safe, and healthy new year. And again, check out Monster Tarver, give him a follow, and I can't wait to see what he's got next. All right, the CHH-ish podcast, episode 1, over. Peace. Good night, everyone.